Learning Nefesh HaChaim in Shar Aleph. At the moment we are in Perek Vav. And what we left off with last week was a number of points. Number one, we'd said before in Perek Hay that man is the Nefesh Chai of the world. He is the living soul. He's the soul of the worlds. Now, you've got all the worlds in, ranging from higher to lower worlds, a whole hierarchy of worlds. And right at the top of all of the worlds, the initial force of the world, which is the neshama, the nefesh of the worlds, is the soul of man. And then in chapter 6, he introduced the idea that it's not exactly like we have a soul, our body has a soul. Our soul dictates to our body, and the body responds immediately. Right? Your mind thinks, I want to scratch my cheek, so you scratch your cheek. It's almost automatic. Here it's a little bit different. And to introduce this difference, he started off with one idea, that was that man is called Ma'asef Kol HaMachanot. Now, since he's the last of the creatures in creation, he has gathered within him all of the forces of all of the upper worlds. All of the upper worlds have sent their influence down on him, and he has the influence of all. He has the influence, he has the powers, he has the lights, he has the energies, he has the abilities of all the upper worlds. He has a representative element of every one of the upper worlds within himself. He has the power of all the upper worlds within himself, and that is man, who is last in creation, has all of these powers. That was the second idea we brought. A third idea we brought is that parallel to man and the construction of man, the structure of man, are the 613 mitzvahs. 613 mitzvahs exist in our physical world. There's a physical manifestation of all the mitzvahs, but in upper worlds there's the roots of the upper mitzvahs, and they actually occupy the highest of worlds. They are the highest of worlds. And the point we didn't get clear last week, which I subsequently looked at again, is that when man is performing at the optimum, when man is fulfilling mitzvahs and living his life and enjoying his life, relishing his life, serving Hashem with joy, and with love and with fear, etc., when he's living his life to the maximum, so then he aligns himself with the mitzvahs, which are in the upper worlds, because the mitzvahs are also parallel. In other words, all the limbs of the man is also parallel to all of the mitzvahs. All of the mitzvahs are sort of spread out over all of the worlds. And therefore, he aligns himself in his actions and in his lifestyle, aligns himself with the upper worlds, and therefore he becomes the chariot for the mitzvahs. So to speak, the mitzvahs become the passenger and he is the vehicle. And the mitzvahs dwell in him. And we could explain that with a simple analogy. If, let's say, for instance, you need a table and chairs. You need a way to sit. And you need, let's say, a way to eat or way to learn Torah. Right? So you need a chair to sit on. You need a table. So that's your desire. So when that table and chair arrives in your house, so now that you can sort of, so to speak, sit. You can, so to speak, sit your desire at that table and chair. As there's a desire to have a table and chair, right? That's your desire, and you fulfill that desire by having a table and chair. Now you actually fill the table and chair. The table and chair are now serving you. They are your vehicle. They are the vehicle by which your desire is met. Right? Let's say a person has a desire to drill a hole through a wall. So he can't just drill a hole through a wall. He can't look at the wall and a hole will appear. He needs an electrical drill. So the electrical drill will be the vehicle by which his desire is fulfilled. So the desire of the world is the mitzvahs, right? And man, by living his life ideally, becomes the vehicle for all of the mitzvahs. So therefore, so to speak, they occupy him. They are the passenger and he's the vehicle. So we're picking up in the present text on page Chof Gimel the idea that we are the vehicle for the mitzvahs. Is in the last paragraph he says, Zeh Shamru Razal, this is what our sages have taught, Ha'avo is hein hein ha-merkova. Our forefathers, they were the chariot. So that's one of the ideas, is that they lived this perfect life, and therefore they were able to fulfill the upper desire of Hashem and carry out his command. And he is, so to speak, Hashem is the passenger, or the desire of Hashem, or the mitzvahs of Hashem. That's the passenger, and And they were the vehicle. They were the perfect vehicle. It mamish fitted all the requirements. It had whatever the vehicle needs in order to travel, in order to go, in order to get to where it needs to go. Right? Whether the vehicle is a limousine or whether it's a jet plane, whatever it is that Hashem needed, the vehicle could cater for the needs of the passenger. Right? Just like as we said before, the electrical drill can cater for the needs of the person who needs a hole through the wall. It has to be the right drill, it has to be the right size, etc. So too, they were the perfect vehicle. And that's the example of that they call the Merkava. Now, he goes on here, it's interesting, in the same passage, to explain what about the opposite way around. What happens when we're not doing the will of Hashem? V'chein lehefe chas v'sholem. The opposite also true, chas v'sholem. V'fgom echad mikvei choysov v'evarov al yedei chatosu. When a person will blemish one of his powers, or one of his limbs, because we are the vehicle, so he blemishes one of these components through his sin, the sin that he sins, gam kein hat gam legia lefi shoshoi. So that blemish reaches up into higher spiritual worlds. That blemish penetrates high into spiritual worlds, according to its root, the force that's linked to that limb or to that ability or to that energy. To that world, and that upper force, which is in line, which is aligned with that particular energy or limb, etc. According to the arrangement of the order of the worlds. In other words, that part of the upper world, which we spoke about, the upper man, Adam Kodmoin, is in the form of a man. So that's parallel of lower man. That's us. We also have the same form of body, right? Head, arms, torso, legs, etc. That same format. So it's exactly parallel. It's the limb that sinned here. It's it was the arm. So therefore, the upper arm over there, so to speak, is blemished. It's damaged somehow. To actually spoil that arm, to spoil that energy, to spoil that force that is designated for our usage. Or to lower it, to lower it to a lower world, or lefagmo, or to damage it somehow, or lachshich, or laktin tzuach oiroi, or to somehow darken, or minimize, or reduce the spark of its light, that its light suddenly becomes dimmer, like a battery that you have, a battery that's starting to run out. So you see the torch gets dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. And just there's not enough energy, so the light, which was a bright light, is now a much weaker light. So therefore it weakens these upper lights, or these upper forces. L'hatish, l'hachlish, to diminish and to weaken, l'ma'et kwech taris k'dushosu chas v'sholem, to diminish the force of its purity, this pure force, this pure holy force, chas v'sholem, hakol kafi erech hachet, all depending on the weight of the sin. Right, not every sin is the same. But often our siyos, and also the way the sin was done. Right, a sin which is done with a heavy heart will do less damage than a sin that's done with amazing enthusiasm. Right, people who run to do an aveira. Right, so therefore that also affect the power of the sin. According to the weight of that world that it's going to reach and its height, its spiritual height in terms of how high up does it go. Right? How high up is the damage? Kilo kol ha'olam is shavu b'shiuran. For not all of the worlds are equal in their dimensions, in their abilities, in their weight. Inyan hapgam v'akilkol, and they're not certainly not equal in terms of the damage done by the one who sins. Shibetachton hu arisas achuban. In the lowest of worlds, someone who sins can make a total destruction. If it's a very low, one of the very lowest worlds, so there can be a total destruction of that lower world. But in a high world, it could just be that there's less light for that upper world. And even still a higher world, it's just a reduction of some of the light that it's receiving, that it's somehow made a little bit less bright, a little bit smaller. And even in a higher world, it just affects, it will affect somehow the polish of the light, the gleam of the light. The gleam will be slightly less, it will be the same light but with less of a gleam. So higher worlds will be affected in a lesser way. The Taz Kedushos HaNiflos, the purity of its holiness will somehow slightly be damaged. And so it would be with all sorts of different levels. You could have the analogy would be in a company where a lowly worker makes a terrible mistake, and that could go up a few levels, but it doesn't get right up to the upper management. It doesn't really affect upper management because they're dealing with such general issues, it doesn't really affect them. But it does cause some sort of a ripple effect, and there is some loss to the entire company. So you have that sort of effect, that each sin has its effect, and depending on the power of the sin, as to how far it goes up. V'zeo inyan shekaro razal v'kama makoim v'slif gam avoyin gam ikoinin shel melech. And this is the idea behind a number of teachings of our sages, where the blemish created by a sin is considered a blemish in the image of the king. Right, whatever, there's a pimple on the face of the king, so to speak. There's some sort of blemish on the image of the king. The king meaning Hashem. Ubezoi Yisroi, begin kach, skips the square brackets, and mishum kach misha poshea b'mitzvah satzera. One who transgresses, one who willfully, negligently, willfully transgresses against the mitzvah of the Torah, moshe poshe beguf hamelech. It's like he actually damaged the king. It's like he actually hit the king. He actually bruised the king. Like a meshugana who comes and suddenly shoots a gun towards the king, right? Or strikes the king.
How's that possible, Baruch
Hu? Well, that's there's an effect, because there is an effect. That's what we're saying. There is an effect on the body of the king himself. And when we say that the body of the king is affected, it's his ability to help us, his ability to influence us, right? The image that he shows us is his appearance, his presence in our lives, and his ability to help us, assist us. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself cannot be damaged in any way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unchangeable, he's unchanged by anything. But in terms of our relationship with Hashem, so that relationship is blemished. The king is now less able to help us because of the way we insulted him. He brings here a posuk, v'yotzvaro b'figre ha'poishim bi. They went out and they saw the carcasses of those who sinned against me. Bi mamish. Bi means in me, so to speak. Bi in me. Those who sinned in me. Because they damn it, they hurt me. One came and slapped the king in the face. Ubetikunim. Another Zohar says also, square brackets, kol misha posha b'mitzvah iski ilu posha b'diukan ha'melech. One who is negligent, is transgresses mitzvahs as if he transgressed against the image of the king. Shabgam nimshach v'nogeh b'perke v'sidrei koiches ha'ilomis ha'shir koima. Right, because the damage that's done affects the limbs, as we mentioned before, and the orders of the different energies of the worlds in the height, in the arrangement of the height of upper man. Mitzad shekulam nichlul luboy, since they're all included in this upper man, and they've all added some sort, they've contributed something to the essence, to the reality of this upper man, in terms of his build, in terms of his health. The health, is he healthy, is he strong, is he able to help us? Perg Zayin. Now we're going to understand, we're going to explain what we said before in Perik Hay, chapter 5. Sha'odom nikra nefesh v'nishmas achayim shel ribe ribvan oilomus. That man is the soul and the neshama, the living neshama of tens of millions of worlds. Loi nefesh k'nefesh hanosun v'dovuk mamish b'tzoich haguf. And not like the soul that's in a body. Ze loi tochen. Not exactly like that, but there is an effect, there is a ripple effect that goes right through millions of worlds. Amnam, haynu kamosha kol pratet nuas netios evra guf. However, just like all of the details of the movements of all of the limbs of the body, heim al yedei nishmas chaim shebo, is through the living soul within the body, all of our movements, all of the details of what we do, all the actions, every aspect of every action, every part action that goes to make the full action, right? If this person does a certain action, he's using his fingers, he's using his hand, he's using his arm, he's using different muscles, all of those different details that go into an action, that's all directed by the neshama, according to its movement and its life force and its inclination. So too it is with all of the inclination of the forces and upper worlds and the order of the chariot. Tikunam ubinyonam arisusam chasus shalom. Either in terms of repairing the chariot, fixing up the chariot, beautifying the chariot, building the chariot, or chasus shalom, breaking the chariot, destroying it. It's only through the arousement, through the actions of man down below. And the reason being that he includes, man himself includes, and he has been designed so with numbers of details of forces and their orders. Like we said before, that all of the forces in the world are represented within man himself. Through the entire arrangement, right, Hishtalshelus is that there's a chain effect, there's a ripple effect right through the worlds, which are connected, upper worlds are connected to lower worlds, higher world being the soul of a lower world, etc., as we said before. And all of this is in terms of the root of his upper neshama, which is, as we said, is way up there. Shia gavoya hapnimis. Now, Lomas Hanivroim Kulam, that it is the highest and most innermost of all of the created worlds. Right? All of this was in chapter 5. L'cheinu Kulel Es Kulam, therefore he includes them all. V'atam, Shenizvah V'perik Hei, Machmas Shoyish Nishmosa Shei Gavoya Pnibis Meir Lomas. Right, the reason, as we explained also in chapter 5, that's in terms of the root of his soul, which is highest and innermost of the worlds. Now, and what we explained in chapter 6 was, so in terms of his upper soul, he's at the very top, the innermost point. And what we explained in chapter 6 was because he includes all forces down below, he includes all the forces of the world. Now we're going to put those two chapters together, and we're going to explain the following point. And according to this, nitna mishpat. And for this reason, it is him alone who has the law of free choice. Only man has free choice. We are the ones who have free choice because we have the power of the world in our hands. So we have the free choice. Lahatis atzmoi, to tilt himself or to incline himself or to move himself. Ve'es ha'olamis, and all of the worlds that are linked to that, to him. So when he moves, all of those worlds move with him, so to speak. There's a tzadah sheyechpat, in whichever way he goes. When he turns left, they all turn left. He turns right, they all turn right, so to speak. And even if he already caused, and he had an effect, you know, his actions had an effect, chas v'sholem, with his sins, in terms of destroying upper worlds, the sidra mekova, or the parts of the divine chariot, it's their destruction or their descent. He has power in his hands to repair whatever he messed up, whatever he ruined, he can repair. Lesakna is to repair that which he made crooked, to make straight what he made crooked. To rebuild what he destroyed. And that's the mitzach who kolu mishuta bikulam, since he includes them all. He's basically got all the building ingredients in himself. So just like he broke it, he could rebuild it. And that is the koach of tshuva, which has the ability to change the past. And that's within the man. So therefore, whether he's breaking, whether he's building, it's all within his actions. And this is what David Melech says, and this is a verse that we're all very familiar with. Hashem tzilcha al yad yeminecho. Hashem is your shadow at your right hand. Hashem is your shadow at your right hand. Haina, which is to say, Shekemosh letias atzel shel ezadov, just like the tilting of the shadow of anything, umechuvan rak kafit nuas oisadova l'anuite. So therefore, it's exactly in line with the item that tilts itself, that item that moves itself. Right? In other words, if you have a shadow of your body and your body moves, so the shadow moves. Right? You raise your hand, your shadow raises its hand. You raise your leg. The shadow raises its leg. Can be dimyona zeh kaviyochol. So with the same analogy, so to speak, who is Baruch Shmoy mischabel into Yisroelomis? Hakadosh Baruch Hu is joined to us to incline, to change all of the worlds, to tilt all of the worlds. Kafit nuas netias ma'ase odom lamata, according to the movements of the man down below. So the way we move, all the upper worlds move because it's like the shadow. And here, interestingly enough, he says it's Hashem who moves the shadow. Hashem tzilcho. Hashem is the shadow. Ad yad yaminecho. V'chein mefurish b'midrash. Okay, a similar teaching which comes from a midrash. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Lech emor le'em Yisrael. Go tell Israel. We know that Moshe said to Hashem, when Hashem was giving him the commands at the burning bush. So one of the things Moshe wanted to know was, how should they call you? What's your name? What name should I give you? So he told, Hashem told Moshe, Kishmi eke ashe eke. I am who I am. Right? I am who I am. So the Midrash asks, what does that mean? Mao eke ashe eke. I am who I am. I am what I am. So the Pshat is, says the Midrash, what is I am what I am? It means that Kashem she'ata hoive in me, just like you are with me, kach ani hoive imoch. So I am with you. That's what it means. I am what I am. That's the way you look at me, that's the way I look at you. The way you act, the way I act. So just like you are with me, the way you relate to me, so I relate to you. V'chein Amar David, the same Midrash also brings the pasuk, Hashem tzilcha al yad yimineh. Hashem is the shadow at our right hand. Mahu Hashem tzilcha. What does it mean? Hashem is our shadow. Ketzilcha, like your shadow. Just like your shadow, if you laugh, so he laughs. You laugh, your shadow laughs. If you start crying, your shadow is also crying. You show him an angry face, or you show him a smiling face. He gives you the exact same thing back. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Tzilcha. That is the Midrash, is Hashem Tzilcha. He's your shadow, Kashem She'ata Hoyve Imoy, Uhoyve Imcho. As you are with him, so he is with you. Ad Kan. What's interesting though here, which I've picked up as I was reading it, was that suddenly we've switched. We spoke before as if to say that the neshama of the person is the innermost force of the upperest world and the highest worlds. And all of a sudden we're speaking about Hashem tilting the worlds this way or that way, and not man's neshama. Maybe this is something that we'll resolve later. But at the moment, it's a little bit, it seems to be somewhat of a contradiction. Ubezoar tetzave. He brings here another Zohar according to this. So again, let's skip down to the square brackets. Bo re'e oilam tachtoin oimed lekabel tamid. See how the lower world stands always ready to receive. And the upper world will only give according to how the lower world stands. Him who oimed be'oris ponim, if the lower world is with a shining face, a glowing face, milamato, as kach me'irim lo milamala, so do they shine down on him from above. The lower world is a happy world, so therefore the upper world is also shows a happy face to shines down. A smiling face from the heavenly world to the lower world. Im hu oimed ba'atzvus, and if the lower world is in a state of sadness and depression, loislin modin ze kenegdu, so there's a punishment that's correspondingly, because when the upper world's frown at us, then things go wrong, and things are upset, and the world is upset. We're upset, and the upper world's upset with us, and therefore that's the response to our approach, or to life, our attitude. And correspondingly, therefore, the pasuk tells us, serve Hashem with simcha, ivdes Hashem b'simcha, ki simcha sa'odim, because the joy of a person, if a person conducts himself with simcha, moshechas eilov, draws to himself, a person with his joy draws to himself, simcha acheres elyoina, he draws to himself a joy, another joy from above, from the heavens, he draws down a heavenly simcha. As we are aroused to act, so too it's drawn down that the corresponding influence from above. That's the Zohar.
What is the Simcha?
Simcha Shal Mitzvah, of course.
Simcha
Sachaim. If you can feel joy about the fact, the privilege of being alive and enjoying Hashem's world, and that's also a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to rejoice in Hashem's world. Of course, a gratitude for the beauty of life. That's also a mitzvah. Right? The person who says Ma Noye Ilan Ze is also a mitzvah. He praises the world. He sees the beauty of the world. That's also called considered. All of that is considered a mitzvah. V'hu inyan akruvim. And this is the idea of the kruvim, the cherubs that on top of the Aron HaKodesh, the holy ark, on the lid of the Aron HaKodesh were two cherubs. So this is the idea of the cherubs. Shayim urim kimar ish lo yis pneim ish lochiv. It says at the time of the destruction of the temple, when the goyim ripped open the pareches and they exposed the Aron HaKodesh, so they saw the kruvim hugging. Right? That's the expression mo'iruis, holding each other, hugging each other. So that's the expression that there is this correlation between the way we are to Hashem, Hashem is to us. So therefore they're hugging each other. The one hugs the one, the other hugs the other. In other words, that's the same idea, the way we act down here. So from the heavens they act towards us.
This is a point of destruction.
So at that point the Jewish people were crying to Hashem. There was a tshuva movement second to none. Unfortunately, we know that as a people, we perform best in times of trouble. That's when we're closest to Hashem. That's when we cry loudest to Hashem. That's when we're most connected with Hashem. When we are faced with disasters, right? The trick is to try and be close to Hashem when everything's going well, right? Then to be grateful, and then to be appreciative, and then to cry to Him and pray to Him and speak, right? But the problem is, the minute we feel we're independent, when we say no, we'll speak to you later. You know, we're busy now, so that's. That's the problem. Now, what he's going to go into is another quote, and that's going to be dealt with in the next chapter. So we've got the one quote, which is from Melachim, where it speaks about the two cherubs embracing each other, and that's how the Rashi says the pshat over there. And then you've got Kruvei Shlomo, Ksiv, by the cherubs of Shlomo, which is going to be explained in detail later, that says that Pneim Levais, they were facing the house. You know, they were facing the outer chamber of the temple. So instead of looking at each other face to face, they were facing outwardly, standing next to each other, facing outwardly. And that we're also going to explain later. And that's exactly what we're going to now, in the beginning of Perek Ches, chapter 8. Hine rezal amru b'inyan akruvim. Our sages taught in terms of the cherubs. Ketzad heim oimdim. Now this is a Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Tzadik Tes. How did the cherubs stand? Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Loza. So what brings it to Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Loza? How the cherubs stand is Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Loza. Chad Omar Pneim Ish Elochiv. One said one was facing the other, face to face. Chad Omar Pneim Lemais. And one said no, they were facing out. They were standing next to each other, facing out, facing towards the temple, the outer chamber of the temple. So now each one of these sages has verses to back him up. And that's what the Gemara now brings. Ulamand omer pneim ish elochiv. The one who says, no, they were facing each other. Haksiv pneim levais. There's a verse that says they were facing the house. They were facing the outer chamber of the temple. So what do you do with that verse? So he says, lekasha, that's not difficult. Kan bezman sheyisrael oisin ritzoin shel mokum. This is at the time when Israel are doing the will of Hashem, so then they face each other, right? Because these cherubs represent Hashem and the Jewish people, so they face each other affectionately. You look, right? You look at your friends, right? Your enemies you turn away from. You don't want to look at him in the face, but your friend you look at him face to face. You know, eye to eye. So therefore, that's when Israel are doing the will of Hashem. They face to face, and the other verse which says that they're facing out. Outwardly, they're facing outward towards the outer chamber. That's when they're not doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Now, that's the one opinion. The other opinion is more problematic, because the other opinion was saying, no, the way they were actually built was facing outwardly. It was the starting point was facing outwardly. So therefore, he brings here the Gemara that asks here, Leman de Omer Pneim Levais, the opinion that says that they were facing outwardly, Haksiv Upneim Ishelochiv. There's another verse that says they were facing each other. What does he do with the verse that says, he said, no, they were built at the outset that they're facing outwardly, they're facing the people who come to visit. So they're both facing out. So what does he do with the verse that says they were facing each other? So the Gemara answers them, it's Tade Tzitzdude. they were at an angle. In other words, they were partially facing each other and partially facing out. Sort of a 45 degree angle. So therefore, that's the answer. Right? It's a loim which is to say, ktsas lebais, partially outwardly, ktsas zelaz, and partially towards each other. This second opinion can't answer like the first opinion. First opinion says when they're doing the will of Hashem, they're facing each other, which is how they were initially created. And when they're not doing the will of Hashem, they're facing out. But the second opinion says, no, they were created facing out. He can't say that they were created, that they're not doing the will of Hashem. Right? That wouldn't be the initial way of designing them. So therefore, he has to say a different answer. He says, no, they weren't totally facing outwards. They were at an angle, they were partially facing each other and partially facing outwardly. Since initially they were created facing outwardly, they wouldn't have built that if that means that the Jewish people are not doing the will of Hashem. And so to the Tosfos explained the Gemara also the same way. The initial positioning of the two cherubs in the base of Mikdash was according to that they were doing the will of Hashem. Initially it was set up, we're doing the will of Hashem, we're building your base of Mikdash. The cherubs should symbolize we're doing the will of Hashem. The Tosfos leaves off with a question, according to the second opinion, why would they be designed facing outwardly, even if they partially angle towards each other? Why would they have done it like that and not face to face? Why not face to face is the best? Why, according to the second opinion, were they done facing outwardly? And this is exactly what he's going to explain with the next Chazal. Okay, now he brings a very famous Gemara that we're all familiar with. And he has his own slight twist on it. And then we'll see how this connects with everything we've been saying up to now. So the Gemara goes as follows. The Gemara says in Ketzad Mevorchim, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Asafta deganecha. The Pasuk says, you shall gather your grain. That's the second paragraph of Shema. And in the second paragraph of Shema, it says there, and you shall gather your grain. Meaning the farmer who's farmed his fields and the wheat has grown, and he's harvested the wheat, and he's made the sheaves. So now he brings the grain into his warehouses, and he's got food for the entire year. Maybe he's got some left over for the following year also. You shall gather your grain. The fish in Ne'emar. So therefore, so in this brisa they ask, why should the Torah tell us you shall gather your grain? Why must the Torah say you shall gather your grain? So the brisa answers, the fish in Emma, because there's another verse elsewhere that says, Lo Yamush Sefer Torah Zemi Picho. There's another verse that says that the words of Torah should never move from your mouth. And that your mouth should always be speaking words of Torah constantly. So Yochel Dvarim Kiksovam, you might think that is meant literally. You've got to be learning day and night until you drop from exhaustion, obviously. And then when you wake up, you start learning again. So you might think it's literal that your mouth should never stop learning. Talmud Loima Asafta Ganecha. No, there's a verse that says, gather your grain. So one verse says, learn Torah day and night. One verse says, gather your grain. And Heig Behem Minag Deche. So what do we do with the two verses? That we have to make a combination. We have to treat the words of Torah with Derech Eretz. Torah in Derech Eretz. You've got to learn Torah, but you've also got to make some time to take care of your business concerns, to take care of your Panosa concerns. So conduct yourself Minag Derech Eretz, Torah v'Derech Eretz. Divei Rabbi Shmuel, and that is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. And on that, Rabbi Shimon Mayuchai argues, Rabbi Shimon Mayuchai oime efshe odom choyresh v'san shas perisha. Rabbi Shimon Mayuchai says, what, if a person starts plowing in the plowing season, and he's sowing in the sowing season, and he's harvesting in the harvesting season, etc., etc., Torah matay aleh, there's always what to do. You know, so some people who've got businesses know, there's always what to do. Right, if you're a farm and you've got fields, there's always what to do. There's always work. There's always extra work around the. So it says, what will be with the Torah? Matei Aleha, what will be with the Torah? And it was, so therefore, Rabbi Shimon Mayuchai argues with Rabbi Shmuel. And he says another pshat, we're going to finish right now. And he says, Ela b'zman sheYisrael oisim ritzoino shel mokum, when the Jewish people are doing the will of Hashem, melochtan nasis al yedei acherim, their work is done for them by others. Others do their work for them. When they're not doing the will of Hashem, then they have to do their own work. The Pasuk says, you shall gather your grain. Okay, now what we're going to see is, according to Bishin Mayochai, you shall gather your grain, sounds like it's a curse, because it means when you're not doing the will of Hashem, you're going to have to do your own work, as it says, Asaf to the Ganecho. At 1 minute, those words appear in the parasha that deals with Brocha. If you'll do the will of Hashem, Hashem will bless you, Asaf to the Ganecho. Right, that will resolve, please God, next class.